This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
How are you?
Yeah, good. Just wondering if John's turning up. Don't know.
To meet his hero.
I don't know if John's turning up.
Do you not? He is turning up.
Is he?
Yeah.
Oh, it's like, oh, right. Oh, this is his hero, isn't it?
Yeah.
This is, he said, this is the guest that will
break.
Well, he didn't say he'd get rock hard, but he's.
Well, he's insinuated, didn't he? In his own special way. Never too hard, never too soft. Oh. Never too hard, never too soft. He's gonna hate. I'm glad he doesn't listen back to these little bits. I always think that.
Oh god.
Poor old John. I feel like he's my kid and the cool kid's coming round and he's going, Dad, please don't embarrass me.
Fuck. Can you explain to the audience who Spencer Owen is?
So Spencer Owen, aka Spencer FC, is a YouTuber that's transitioned into, he was a massive YouTuber. He is a massive name in YouTube.
I want to talk about that, like, till the cows come out.
Yeah. He's met every player under the sun.
Oh!
And now he has transitioned into owning and running his own football club. Started out as just like Sunday League with his mates. And they're now in, I'll have a look what step it is, but they're really high up.
Yeah, they just got into the Isthmian.
Yeah. So they're in the Isthmian Premier Division. They're on a bit of a bad run at the minute, but it is all him and his family doing it. I've been to many games.
What, you've been to watch them?
Many times, because they've had big FA Cup rounds and stuff. Honestly, it's amazing. Yeah, they're playing at Bowers and Pitsy. I don't know if they've changed this year, but...
Right, how do you start... Well,
go on.
I'll ask him this, but how do you start... football team.
Yeah, I don't know.
And then go up the pyramid.
I don't know. We'll have to ask him. Because I want to do it.
So do I. No, I don't. Well,
our team. Yeah, I can't be asked. I know nothing about football as well. Yeah, so that's really, it's really impressive. The games are so good as well because there's often
really
a little bit.
Want to see how John is.
John's going to be acting so different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
God, I wonder if he's done his hair.
He's so nervous.
John? Hey.
Hi, John.
Nah, don't. I'm actually nervous about this episode. Like,
are you?
No, like this, we interviewed Jack, who was like a big part of like my personal, like, not childhood, but like my teens, like watching him. But this, when I say Spencer is like from primary school to now, I still watch this guy religiously. Well, maybe not his. He doesn't do personal content anymore.
Do you watch hashtag?
I could name you. Listen to this. Listen to this. Last night, we were about to watch Love Island, which he has a say in as well now. One of his footballers is on Love Island. And we were sat there and it all hit us all at once. Like, shit. Like, and they were all like, John's going to interview Spen Doggy Dog tomorrow. And like, that is like the most mental thing to all of them. Deza, who Alfie knows quite well, is not a very emotive person.
No.
And he turned to me and went, you're actually going to interview like an icon of our childhood, like everyone's childhood here. Like everyone would dream to
John,
be in your position.
John, I need to know the ground rules. Do you want us to tell him that you love him? and that you're a massive fan.
I can't go through 30 seconds without telling.
Yeah, that's fine.
John,
yeah,
your Wi-Fi's cool. Playing up, John.
Oh, John.
I could name you every
Wi-Fi's playing up, John.
Is it bad? Is it? I'll
oh no, it's going, John. Oh, you can't have a conversation.
I can leave and join back on. Okay, I'll leave. Relax. I'll come back in 2 seconds.
It's me. Hello. Sorry, I got so worried.
Am I lagging now? Okay, it might go every now and then because the internet in my house is like not go, but like.
Well, like tell bloody Desert and Lemlock to log off.
No, they're out. There's no one in the house. Everyone's left the house so I can have internet for this moment. Yeah, everyone is out.
I'm saying this now, okay? This is your stage.
No, 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 no.
This is your hour with your hero.
No, 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 no.
You can take over.
No, please don't. Please don't, because that will make it worse. I genuinely... Stop doing that! Stop doing that!
John, it's a big part of the pod. Embrace it.
Am I still lagging? Am I lagging?
You're all right at the moment, but it's not going to look good.
Well, can we just say that my internet's a bit dodgy at the start?
Yeah, okay.
Oh, don't do this. This is adding more pressure than it.
This is your hero.
One of them, yes. A big part of my childhood as well, yeah.
Fuck.
Oh, I'm actually...
John, do you want me to ask him afterwards in secret, did you like John, and see what he said?
No, I don't, I'm not bothered. I mean, I want him to like me, but I mean, I'm not too bothered about other people's opinions.
Are you nervous? Are you nervous?
Yeah, like I don't really get nervous for this kind of anybody, but I am genuinely quite nervous. Even though he's just another human being.
He's not.
He's really not, John.
Unfortunately, he's not.
Oh, shut up. This is...
He's meant to be incredibly judgmental.
Oh, no, like... he's a lovely, reserved, just family man. Just you're being a bit overbearing. So just...
What if he asks you to work for him?
That's what I was thinking today.
He's not going to ask me to work for him.
No, I'm really worried I'm going to embarrass you. I really don't want to embarrass you.
Oh, do you want me to not say certain things?
No, you can say whatever you want. I don't care. Let's just have a normal conversation with a normal human being. Oh, for God's sake. I might actually leave. I might actually have to leave. I can't do this.
Spencer's coming in.
Oh, God. This is terrifying.
I'm nervous for John.
Hey. Oh, God, this is actually quite surreal for me. This is really, really weird.
How you doing, guys? Right.
All right, Spen.
How you doing?
Boys.
Yeah, good, thanks. You good?
Yeah, I just want to put you at ease by saying John is absolutely in love with you.
Normally I would butt in and say that that's an over-exaggeration, but I genuinely am.
Yeah,
maybe
I'll
not with
it.
You specifically, but your content.
Well, let's just say it's me. But yeah. Cheers, John. Thanks for that, mate. Love you too.
John, tell Spencer what you like about
him. Well, it's probably easy to say what I don't like. literally everything he's ever made, like from primary school till where I am now, I've watched everything that
I'm really worried Spencer's just going to leave the chat.
Yeah. If I'm Spencer, I'm leaving.
Right. I've got a whole host of things I could say. The FIFA player, which is neither here or there, confirmed that Spencer is or not. We won't go into that. The Zarate kid, Once Alar and Forever Blow-In, Spandex Cup.
He's a proper fan. I love this.
Yeah.
Everything.
It's a bit much, John.
Yeah, okay, that's fine. But basically, what all my mates were saying that...
He's generally going to cry.
Which is quite a big statement.
I didn't hear what you said your mates are saying, but I'm sure it's lovely.
This is a nightmare. This is actually a nightmare.
Thank you for coming on today.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. I'm not quite at the level of John, but I'm a big fan of yours, David, to be fair. Massive fan.
Oh, really?
Like, yeah, mate. Everything I've seen you in, I've absolutely loved, to be fair, like always. So when Alfie, and obviously I know Alfie pretty well, so when Alfie said to come on, I was more than happy to, yeah, for sure.
Oh, God, my heart started fluttering then.
Yeah, this is lovely. I like Alfie too, by the way, Alfie. You're nice as well, mate.
That's all right, mate. I'm just, you know, part of the furniture. That's fine.
Oh, thanks, Spencer.
No, definitely, mate. Thank you.
I don't quite know how to move forward. I feel like this is... Like, how are you feeling, John?
Well, I'm quite anxious about my internet. Right. I'll leave and join back. Give me 30 seconds.
Right, where... Where are you, Spencer? Where are you calling
from? I'm in a very messy office at the side of my house in Essex. It's basically a football, like you can sort of see some of it. I've just got football shirts everywhere. I'm actually doing a big clear out this week. I'm selling some of my old football shirts to try and raise money for my football club.
Oh, damn.
Not in desperate times or anything. I just got too many shirts, basically. My missus is on at me, so I've had to offload some. But yeah, this is kind of the brain hub of the operation. And we have another office down the road, which is where we're on the football team from, but this is where I do my little bits from. There's some stuff on the wall that John would absolutely love. That picture there, that framed shirt there is a framed shirt from a competition we did called the Wembley Cup. We played a big sort of football games at Wembley, and that's my shirt from, I think, first one. I've got my YouTube memorabilia everywhere. That is a million subscriber plaque at the end of the room there. I don't like to talk about it, though. But yeah, we've got lots of bits in here.
Flipping hell.
Here he is.
There he is. John, this is unbelievable.
You just missed some absolute gold, John.
No, don't say that. What did I miss?
Don't show him again. Quickly, John, as I said, you'd enjoy that. That's my shirt from the Wembley Cup there.
Oh, don't.
I said, that's my million subscriber plaque there. That is some branding that I nicked from the $1 million tournament we played in last year in America. I mean, this whole room is literally like a YouTube shrine, to be honest. There's so much stuff in it.
Spencer, would you send John just some bog roll or something?
Used.
No, I don't. No, no, I don't want to use bog roll.
Yes, you would.
No, I wouldn't.
You'd
no.
take it. You no. would.
Where would I put it?
Well, the one place. Yeah.
Spencer, for me, for my sake, can I ask, like, how did it all start? Oh, you've probably been asked this loads, so a really dull question.
Not at all, not at all.
How did it all start? How old were you? What did you do?
Okay, so the truth to that really is actually, well, I used to want to be a radio DJ. I'm 35 now, so I sort of still grew up in that era where we were all growing up wanting to do the more traditional, you know, like media jobs and stuff. So I did hospital radio as a kid. I ended up doing uni radio. I did stand-up comedy.
Did you?
For a couple of years, yeah, at uni.
When? What years?
Well, between 18 and 22, so it would have been like 2007 to like 2011. A lot of the guys I started at the same time was like Tom Rosenthal, Joe Lycett.
No.
I was at Romash Ranganathan's first ever gig. I was with, I did a lot of gigs with Joel
Dommett.
Traditional
clubs?
I was like on the cusp. I had my best, I mean, I wasn't great because obviously I didn't keep doing it, but I had my best luck with like other student union gigs. So I'd go to like a uni. And I was getting paid like 100 quid here and there, you know, but I was, I did like a 20-minute set in Lincoln Uni, did really well. And then the next day I did basically the same set at some club in Westminster and just bombed. And I was like, okay, I'm not really sure about this. But it's really relevant to the story because I started making YouTube videos around the same time. And one time I went to a gig and it was like a 3-hour drive, did the gig, got probably after petrol, made about 30 quid. And I'd gigged to say 150 people, and I came back, and that video I'd made before I left was on like 3,000 views, which is nothing now. But I started to think, is this a bit of a diseconomy? I might be better off using my time making YouTube videos because I can reach more people. And at that point, they were still comedy videos; they weren't anything to do with football.
Why were you uploading it just to see what would happen? Just
to be honest, I still wanted to be a radio DJ. The reason I started stand up was because Tom Deacon, who's a friend of mine.
Yeah, I know Tom Deacon.
He won the Chortle Student Comedy of the Year award, which I'd entered as well the year after. And he got a job at Radio 1. So I was like, I basically want to copy that trajectory, which is funny because like 2 years later, I ended up producing I worked at a football YouTube channel and ended up producing a show with Tom Deacon. That's how I became friends with him. So when I did YouTube, I looked at it the same way. I was like, this is like if I can do well, I might get a gig. It was like a CV. Like if I can get some good views on these videos, because there was no chance of money back then. We're talking like 2010, no one was making money off YouTube. It might get me a gig. And then when I started making football videos, because I ended up working in football kind of coincidentally, they just resonated more for whatever reason. So I was like, okay, I'm going to go down this route. And then I still looked at it as a CV because I wanted to get a job on like TalkSport or Match of the Day or something like this, but the whole YouTube thing just blew up and it ended up being my own little platform, really.
Right. When you said it resonated more, what does that look like with figures?
More views. So, like, when I was doing comedy videos, there was no thread, there was no narrative, just random sketches and things. And some would do okay, some would be really not do well. And some would, you know, I'd look back on and still think they're funny. Some I'd look back on and be like, it's get this video out of circulation ASAP. And there was no, I think with YouTube, you start to resonate with people when they understand what you're trying to do and like they get what you are as a, for want of a better word, like a brand, if you like, you know what I mean? They understand what you're buying into. Like if you're a stand-up comedian, they know you're trying to make people laugh. I was just doing different things. And then the first things I did that were properly successful, I guess, in the football world was I started doing these Premier League poems. So the football season was ended. It was like a comic angle to them. It would be like a 2-3 minute long sort of comic poem about the review of the season. And lots of little wordplay and stuff. And then, and I think one of them got like maybe, I don't know, 30, 40,000 views. And that was massive for me back then. And
how long had you been going up to that point? How long had you been posting videos?
Depends when you start. Like, the first ever videos I posted weren't even on YouTube. They were on something called Google Video, which is what, before YouTube bought, well, Google bought YouTube. They had the platform called Google Video. And I didn't even post them myself. It's quite funny. My mate, I was making like... I was doing videos in my mum and dad's attic, sort of miming to like Queen songs and stuff. I was like 14, 15. And my mate, I sent them to my mate on MSN back in the day. And he was like, upload. And they actually went for that. Bear in mind, this should have been like 2003 or something. They went like viral. One of them had like 300,000 views, which back then was loads. And it was me being reached. It was not a video for public consumption. I mean, this video ended up getting shown on Graham Norton because I was on the Graham Norton show and they found it.
What?
And I was like, what's going on? But that was my first thing. When I started deliberately making videos, it was like 2007 when I was at uni. And I was that guy posting all my videos on Facebook, going to my mates, like, please watch and share. And they were like, we're not going to do it. These are bad. Stop doing it.
Yeah, I've been there.
And
as well.
Eventually some of them came round, but yeah.
Can you remember the day when you thought I'm onto something here?
So I worked for a YouTube channel called Copper 90, which was a big football YouTube channel. They had funding from Google. It was like a YouTube original channel. So we had like a load of money to make football shows. It was like a dream job for me because I'd been working on YouTube myself for no money. And I got to do it with a bit of a budget. So I started producing for them. And I was working with Tom Deacon, as I mentioned. He's a big YouTuber, obviously called KSI, who I started producing the show for as well. So I got to meet him. And he was the first guy that started to make money on YouTube. And he was like, oh, okay. Like, there's something here. He was really popular. So I learned a lot from what he was doing. And then, so John mentioned it, like, you know, I'm just going to caveat everything I talk about now with the word allegedly, because it's a secret character that we're not supposed to really talk about. But I have talked about it in a Sunday Times bestselling book. Basically, my job was to come up with ways to get subscribers for that YouTube channel.
Yeah.
So I was like, right. And like, when we did these collaborations with YouTubers like KSI, it wasn't cheap. You had to pay them to sort of share the videos and get subscribers that way. So I basically went, we need a cheaper way to get subscribers. We need to make our own IP, like our own product, our own character that does the same thing these guys are doing. So I basically created a character that was built around my skills, right? And I knew FIFA was massive because JJ, KSI was just flying and everyone wanted to watch FIFA. I liked to play FIFA. I was pretty decent at FIFA, but it wasn't something I had any aspirations to work in at this point. But I was like, right. More importantly, I was leaning on the sort of comedy background I had. I think I'd grown up playing FIFA with my brother, like trash talk, you know, you're trying to really put people off their game. And obviously I had experience doing stand-up, doing presenting and stuff. So I knew I could do that on camera and not affect me. A lot of these guys, because this whole show is built around me going to YouTubers' houses, which already was novel because no one ever went to see these YouTubers. They were all just in different parts of the world in their bedrooms, and I was going to like Iceland and America
and
like,
all these places to do this.
So it's one of my jobs. I was still my title at this point was still like audience development manager or something, but I just created this side hustle for me to be a sort of comedy. It's basically like Ali G playing FIFA sort of thing, like chav, massive chav. And and I'd go to these guys' houses, and it was a win-win. If I won, it was like, because everyone I played was supposed to be pretty decent, then I'd look like, you know, this. I'd be funny, hopefully, and also win. But if I lost, I had to do punishments, and I had to do some pretty, like, extreme stuff. So it was comedy. The character was self-deprecating. Like, people liked to watch me lose and liked to watch it go wrong for me, and I was fine with that, as long as it was funny. And I ended up beating, like, the world champ, like, genuinely beating 1-0, the world champ of West Ham.
Serious?
And it actually happened at a world championship event. So I had a few good moments. So I remember when that happened, I texted my dad and I said, all that time you told me not to play computer games, because I obviously was half decent. I was like, I've just beaten the world champ. Like, you know, not many people can say that. And he was like, yeah, but you could have been good at snooker.
Yeah.
Just touch on the FIFA player. I remember, like, when I was at school, people would run around shouting lethal injection. Do you remember that? Yeah. People just run around shouting. It was unreal. Like, literally everyone I knew watched, like, FIFA player, and then obviously what developed from it.
Good times, man. I still say now that it's one of the most, probably the most fun I've had. I don't know, David, if you've ever had any experience with this, like, because it was a masked character. So I felt like when you put a mask on, you just become so free. Like, you.
I used to do stand up in character.
There you go. Exactly.
So I
felt
like any terrible thought I had in my head in that moment on stage, so I'd just say it.
Yeah.
I'd just say, Brian said it. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's so true, though, isn't it? It's freeing.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And I loved it. And I don't think I've ever had as much fun. I mean, I've had amazing, I've been really lucky. I've done some great, crazy things, but I've never had as much fun, I don't think, as that, because you just sit. And obviously, it wasn't live or anything. So, like, you know, if a joke didn't land or it was just silly, we just cut it out. And it was just so much freedom. One of my favorite moments of that, no one really knows this moment, I don't think I've ever talked about it, is like in the height of FIFA player sort of popularity, I went to an event called Eurogamer. Do you remember, John, there was a big Eurogamer scandal with JJ one year and all this stuff? And FIFA player was like, I'm not going to try and say I'm some method actor or anything, but we never dropped character. So like, if I went to meet these YouTubers, I would not only stay in my costume the whole time, I would continue to be a dick to them off camera, like properly, to the point where 2 years in, you boys might remember some YouTubers called 2Sync, these lovely brothers.
Yeah.
They were the only people that had refused to play me and be in a video of me. And when I met them years later as myself, they were like, we just thought you were horrible. We thought you were going to be really mean to us. And I was like, I'm not actually that guy. It's an act, and I'd obviously done a half decent job at it.
Yeah.
And but anyway, so I'm in full costume.
You'd be
Euro
like that
game,
off camera.
Say again,
you'd
mate.
Be like that. You'd be like that off camera.
Yeah, to the point where, because the character was dressed like, you know, an Asbo, a walking Asbo, right? Like literally snood up to my eyes, hoodie up, you know, sportsdirect.com. I would be like, one time I was outside KSI's parents' house when he lived there, and we were waiting to film, and the police got called. Someone in another house just saw me loitering with intent to win FIFA games, and they called. The police on me, and I had to be like, "No, I'm actually a good lad. Like, I'm not really bad."
But did you always wear Slazenger? Wasn't that like the thing?
Yeah,
Slazenger was like Slazenger. The go-to.
I've probably got some FIFA player memorabilia in here somewhere. Slazenger was more Donna, had a bit Dunlop. You know, all the big names. Should have had a brand deal with Slazenger. Really, I missed the trick
definitely.
There.
That's unreal.
So what year did you stop stand-up to sort of lean into this more?
It would have been 2000 and it was after uni. So I think it was when so my first job after Copper 90s, before Copper 90, I worked for Vincent Company, the Man City captain, doing social media stuff.
Yeah, so I was David's doing, you're going to have to go in. David's going to flip and love that. I forgot to mention that.
Yeah, it's the 11-12 season, the first Premier League winning season. Well, it was partly due to me, that.
Well, you spent time in his company?
Yeah, all the time. I stayed at his house. I went to Patrick Vieira's house with him. Had a race with Mario Balotelli.
Whoa.
Slow down. Backtrack.
You're in it then.
This is a crazy job. Imagine I'm like 22, 23, out of uni, and I end up getting this job where I'm working for Man City captain. So my first job, so when I went to uni, I did an internship at Channel 4. And this was working. This was in like the corporate relations department, but it was like a whole sort of scheme I applied for. I did it. And then after uni, they offered me a job to go and work in that department. And it was an amazing opportunity, but obviously it's not creative at all. It's like a corporate role. And at the same time, I got offered this job to go and basically be a social media assistant at a football computer game. Never applied for a job in football, never really was seeking one, but it was like something that suited my interests. So I went and did that instead. And I did that for about 8 months, 9 months. Then I quit it because I was like, actually, you know, I don't want to like make social media content for other people. I want to make my own content. So I quit it just to pursue stand-up, do more stand-up. And like 2 months after I quit it, and in between this is something that a lot of people that in the creative industry will be able to resonate with. Like at the time, these decisions were not said to be good decisions. All my mates and family were like, you are an idiot. And like, I went from working in this really cool computer game in London to like after gigs, I was driving my dad's truck delivering solar panels. You know, like I was to the outside world, I'd had a stinker. Yeah. And then just pure luck, the management of Vincent Company contacted the company that I had quit, said, we need a social media person. Can you advise anyone? And they were like, look, he's just quit our job. We're not sure he wants to do it, but have a chat with this lad. And they had an interview with me, and I was like, look, I know I don't really want to do this long term, but this is like the dream version of that job, like football, all that stuff. So I was like, go on then. And it ended up being a really cool job. Did it for that whole season. But then I quit that as well. And everyone told me I was an idiot. It was well paid.
By the way.
You know, it was like...
You know what you want, don't you? You know what you want. You've always.
Well, I didn't. This is the thing. So Vincent Company sat me in his car, and he goes to me.
Whoa! Hang on a minute.
This is just mental.
You doing in his car?
I used to go up to Manchester. I worked in London remotely, but I'd go up for games and I'd spend some time with them. We'd plan whatever we were going to do. It's worth saying, Vincent Company, like super ahead of his time, was really. He's really clever, but like,
is he on your phone?
Huh?
Is he on your phone?
He is, yeah, but I don't think... Yeah, I'll tell you the story now. I don't think he really likes me anymore, and I'll tell you why.
What?
I sort of understand, to be fair. Basically, so I'd worked for him for like 8 months, everything was going well, and I knew I didn't want to do the job. And I've got this thing where, like, what I should have done in this time, because I'll be honest, I was working remotely from London, apart from when I got up for games and stuff. I had loads of free time, right? The job was not challenging for me. So what I should have done, as someone who was interested in creative, I should have been gigging every day. I want to do stand up. I should have been, you know, like making more YouTube videos, all this stuff. But my mind doesn't work like that. If I'm like doing something for someone, I feel like I'm taking the mic if I do anything else. So instead, I was just going to the gym and playing Football Manager. Like, that's literally what I was doing. And I knew that this wasn't the best use of my time. So I said, I need to get out of this and then put myself, you know, they talk about it in that Friends episode. It's like, you have to give yourself the fear. For me, I need the fear, like, where's my next meal coming from? And that's when I'll make the next move. So I was like, I need to quit. All my friends but one, all my family, all told me, don't quit. Good job. Do it for another season. Good money, et cetera. Everyone, my brother, who works on YouTube with me now, he told me not to quit. Everyone told me not to quit. And I kept talking to people until someone told me to quit. And I was like, yes, you're right. And he was a director friend of mine. And so I went up to Manchester, said, guys, I'm leaving. Like, I need to do something else. It's an amazing opportunity. And listen to this, right? This is mad, okay? So I'm 23. I'm in their presence, him and his management, all these people. And I'm like, guys, I want to move on. Like, I can't say enough thank you. Thank you for the opportunity. But there's someone out there who would love this job and do it for 10 years. And it's just not me. I'm going to leave eventually. So you might as well just let me go. And they go, what do you want to do? And I go, I'll be honest, I don't know. I said, I want to do something more creative. And then, and he goes, the manager goes to me, well, write a book. Vincent will publish it.
What?
So I have to say no to that. And I was like, no. I don't want you to like just publish something because you like that I'm a social media guy. I want to do something good. And anyway, he gives me a lift to the station, Vincent. He sits me down. And he says to me, look, I understand what you're saying. Give me one more year because like it helped me a lot. And then you'll go with all my best wishes and I'll help you. Whatever you want to do next, I'll sort of help you on your way. And I was like, can't do that, I'm afraid.
What the man himself? I would do anything if he asked me.
I know,
to.
I feel almost bad because that's what I said to her. I said, the reason I'm going to not do it is because I know there's someone who will take the job off me and be unbelievable at it and like will just be everything you want.
Fuck them.
I'm not motivated to do this, so you don't actually want me as much. It was just inconvenient for them for me to leave. That's all it was. It wasn't actually. Yeah. I think also, like, and I mean this as a compliment, not as an insult by any means, but people like that aren't used to having people say no to them, I think. And I think when they do, they kind of go, all right, cool, you're like dead end to me now. We're not going to sort of, you know, I still talk to his, actually I tell a lie to be fair. I still talk to his manager, but also I found out last year that Vincent Company's son, who wasn't even born when I worked for him, watches my videos. So I got asked by Vincent's manager if I could do a little video saying, cause he didn't believe that I used to work for him. So I did a video for his son going, yeah, I did used to work for your dad. Thanks for watching the videos and all that. So there is some sort of contact there, but
yeah.
Not as much as I'd like.
How did he respond when you said, I can't do that, I'm afraid?
I think the reality is that I sort of said in the car, I'll think about it. And I went back to London. And then a few days later, I said, like, sorry, I wasn't probably brave enough to say it to his face.
Spencer, when you're quitting all these jobs, is there something in the back of your head that tells you it's the right thing to do? Or are you sort of like absolutely crapping it?
Like, people probably don't believe me when I say this, but it's genuinely always been true. I've never cared about money. So it's never been about money. So that's been easy for me to make that decision. Like, I didn't come for money or anything. Like, I always felt like, you know, I felt from a very young age, it's about enjoying every day, like enjoying what you do. And if I don't know what I want to do, I'll find out what I don't want to do, and then I'll quit it straight away. I won't waste one day of my life in that job, even if it's a great job objectively. So that was, I didn't have a plan at all, John. I never knew, like, this is a great decision. And I don't think it's a case of going, oh, looking back, it was a great decision. I just think you find a way to make whatever decision work. That's got to be the mindset. So it could have been a bad decision, but I made it a good decision, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And where do you reckon you learned your outlook?
I don't know, mate. I don't know. Like, I distinctly remember being 16 in a English exam. You know, like, if you're doing one of these written exams, and sometimes you finish it early and you've got a bit of time and you can't go anywhere, so you just sort of sit at the end of the exam. I was sitting with my head in my hands. I used to like try and sleep on the desk. And I just had this weird like epiphany where I was like, oh my God, I'm sure everyone thinks this at some point. Like, I'm going to spend so much of my life working, like so much more than anything else, more than with my family, maybe sleep's the only thing I do more of. So it's actually a terrible decision to do a job you don't like. And I'm not saying everyone has that option, right? But for me, it was like, if I can decide now, I'm just never going to do a job I don't like. That guarantees me like a certain percentage of my life will be fun. So that was my mentality.
That is exactly what I was like doing my exams. Literally exactly the same. I just thought, I cannot do. And then every job I've done, like I've done some jobs that have lasted like 2 days because I'm just like, I can't do it. I don't like it. I'm not wasting a single day doing something I don't like.
Yeah, it's massive for me. I think as I've got older, I've realized that it's almost like a bit of a mind trap as well sometimes, because when you get older, particularly if you've achieved like some element of what people would call success or what have you, you start to like that value system actually becomes a bit of a challenge, because you start to judge yourself if you're not happy every day. And you're like, oh, I've made this decision. I should be happy every day, which is obviously impossible for anyone to achieve. And like basically, I've had to learn to almost turn that off a little bit as well as I got older. Like, I think you create a sort of personality when you're a youngster. This is quite deep now. I know, I don't know how deep you guys normally get, but
we go very deep.
Deeper than this, mate. Come on.
Yeah, you just create a personality that suits you at that point in time. And then sometimes, and maybe later years, you can kind of discard that personality a little bit. And I think that's what I've done in recent years. Now I'm like a bit more fat. I've got a young child and I'll try and spend more time with family. And I think more about being happy in the present rather than like, how am I going to do this and achieve this? I'm not as sort of hungry. Some people would probably say it's a bad thing, but I don't. I think it's actually means I'm a bit more well-rounded as a human now, whereas before I was desperate to achieve. I mean, you all know this, David. Like, I think 90% of the people that do stand-up or go into that sort of trying to make people laugh industry have got some sort of, sometimes they haven't, but sometimes it's like they've got some sort of insecurity where they need, certainly for me, I needed people to tell me I was good. I needed that mass acceptance, which YouTube is the like automatic, you know, instant gratification version of. Did this video get views? Am I popular? Do people like me? You know what I mean? And
how stressful does that get?
Oh, mate.
At its height.
It wasn't at the start because it wasn't as competitive at the start. And it was more about, weirdly, it was a bit more of a meritocracy at first. Like I always say, like, and John hopefully can back this up, like the thing that people always say to me is they loved like my FIFA series and stuff, which is like I just basically watched loads of TV as a kid. So when I started doing FIFA series, I just took like TV ideas and put them into the game FIFA. Like Wheel of Fortune is based off Wheel of Fortune, you know, like, you know, I've basically ripped off every game show and put it into a FIFA series, which back then in YouTube was enough to be the best. I didn't beat any algorithms. Go back and watch all my FIFA videos. They're literally like Wheel of Fortune episode one. That's the title. The thumbnails are exactly the same on every video. There's no like gaming of the system, which you have to do now. And I'm not very good at that. I don't like it. So I've sort of moved away from it, but it gets more stressful now. If you don't get views instantly, you're like, oh yeah, what's happened here? So I've tried to remove myself from that.
So at its height, sort of how obsessive were you about views and keeping track of it and thinking about the next thing you post? And
I think I worked like a dog, basically, and my missus quit her job quite soon after I went full time on YouTube, and we just grinded. We even like planned it out. We were in this flat, sharing a flat in London with our friends. We were like, right, how are we going to get from here to here in the next few years? And we were like, right, you're going to quit. When I quit my job, I didn't have enough to pay the rent. When my missus quit her job, we didn't have enough to pay the rent. But we just went, right, we'll give ourselves a few months. You know, for me, if you're fortunate enough to have a family that love you, that will let you live in their house if you mess it. Can I swear on here or not? I don't know if you swear.
No, yeah. That's the one thing we don't do.
Okay. So is that true?
No.
I'm used to it. Yeah, if I fuck this up, have I got a safety net? You know, and it's not a financial safety net. It's just someone that will literally let you sleep in their spare room. Then that's enough for me to try. So we both tried that and knew if we can't pay our rent in 2 months, we'll just move home for a bit. And because I wasn't like these other YouTubers. I wasn't like 16. I was like 25 when I quit my job. And yeah, it was like, let's give this, once it started to just about cover our costs, it was like, okay, what happens if we do this for 2 years, 3 years, and we like just don't do anything else? We don't socialize. Like I honestly lost friendships over it. I didn't see my friends for ages. You know, I missed so many things because we were doing a video a day. Back then it was grinding, video a day, video a day. And some of those videos were like big videos that couldn't be done in a day. So you had to find ways to get this stuff done. You know, we used to do this stuff at Christmas because December is traditionally the best month for YouTube revenue. So we'd call it Deathcember. And we would get up every day at 3 a.m. every December, and I would just make videos, and we'd put up like two a day in December. And I was like the walking dead by mid-December, like overweight, like bloodshot eyes, I hadn't slept. No one would see this on YouTube, and you'd make loads of money in that month. And it wasn't because we were desperate for money, so we just wanted to pay the rent. And after doing that for 2 or 3 years back to back, thank God, you go from being like just about covering your costs to suddenly, you know, we're in a position to get a mortgage and stuff like this. So it's like, it was a great decision, but I would never do it again. I would never grind like that again.
Flipping.
I really like Casey Neistat.
Yeah.
3 or 4 years ago, and yeah, just followed his daily vlogs. And like, I just couldn't work out how he did it every day.
He went on the Diary of a CEO recently. He talked about that quite a lot. He was like, yeah, same sort of thing, really. It's just not sustainable.
I don't get how people have something interesting to do every day. Like, most of the days I don't have anything to do. I'd be the most boring person to watch ever.
I'd watch it.
I would too. Little shower.
There's three.
I don't think they film themselves in the shower.
How long are you showering for every day? Like,
a long time.
I'm bad. I'm twice a day, every day. Yeah,
that's not good. That's not good for you.
It's really bad for my hair as well. Like, I shampoo my hair both times, so like it's bad for it. It's not great.
See, you've got our attention.
Yeah,
here we go.
This is gold dust. Like Casey Neistat goes on like 50k runs and like rides his skateboard through New York. Like, not many people have that like privilege, I guess.
Mm. I think there's an element of curation in that lifestyle as well. Like, whereas some things aren't from that day, and you have to do. You can't not do it.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's. I used to get stressed watching that, just thinking, "How's he doing this?" Because I had 90% of my videos were just FIFA videos, which were, you know, I don't do that anymore, but I did it for a long time, and without it, I wouldn't be here. And it was like, set up a camera like this,
put
on the screen, play FIFA, and it was basically an hour and a half recording session to make a sort of 20-minute video, and I would just do that three times back to back, so it'd be like 4.5 hours, get three videos, and at this point, I had my missus editing them. So I wasn't actually editing them anymore. This is one of the big things that people don't understand. Like, a lot of YouTubers, certainly in the early days, were very precious about editing their own videos.
Yeah.
Because you've got to control that, like, you know, the audience interaction and the jokes. And I did that, but then I was like, this isn't practical. Can't keep doing this. So I just created these. My missus, even now, is a co-owner of a football club, doesn't like football, never played FIFA. She was editing some of the most popular FIFA videos of all time on YouTube for years. And I just created a... Yeah, she literally did. I just created a template. It's just a template. It's like, put that there.
Yeah.
Here's the joke. And I would review every edit. But she smashed it.
It's mental to think that my childhood was edited by Alex. It's crazy.
Even the... Wait, I've got the wheel... Should I get the Wheel of Fortune? It's right there.
Oh, don't.
And she made that with her bare hands. Look at this, David.
Don't. I'll have a mental breakdown, I think.
John.
Do you know how many times I watched Spencer spin this goddamn wheel and like pray it would be something decent?
Oh my god.
My missus made this with a bare hand.
That's unreal. I actually feel like I'm watching
it's really good.
A Wheel of Fortune video. What is going on?
Oh, buy a player. What
are you thinking, John? What are you hoping for, Johnny?
No, open a pack. I always remember, or open 10 packs.
SBC.
It's probably one of the worst ones.
Got it.
Yeah. That's got to be in a museum somewhere.
Yeah.
That's honestly, if I was to show my mates that, they think they'd have a mental breakdown. That is, I can't believe I've just seen the Wheel of Fortune wheel. But this is what I mean. Like, talking to you now, it feels like I'm watching the video. Like, even the camera set up the same, and it's like, and you are exactly the same in videos how you are now, which I guess is normal, but not everybody's like that.
Now, that was one of the big things I learned, right? When I was doing the stand-up, I was also trying to get presenting gigs, and I've done a lot of presenting in the last sort of 5 or 6 years. One of the things people always say to you is like, oh, you're actually like, because they think you're going to be a YouTuber who's never left his room. They just assume everyone's the same. And they're like, you're actually not bad at this. I'm like, I was a presenter before I was a YouTuber. Like, that's actually my vocation. And And I'd go to these, and obviously you're not good at it. You start, so I start stand up. It's the same. You're shit at first. You can't talk to camera. Honestly, you go and watch some of my early videos. I'm stiff. Like I'm like, hello, welcome to a video. It's like you wouldn't believe it's me. But yeah, I had that natural progression on camera. I learned it on camera. And I was in an audition. I was in like a thing for presenting, and someone just said to me, talk to the camera like it's your friend, right? And imagine it's a person rather than a camera, because people just go stiff, right? You're like, you don't talk like that in real life. Why are you going, hello, welcome? Just talk to me. And then I took it literally. So still to this day, 10 years in, I still say at the start of every video, all right, mate, how you doing? Because that's how I address my mate. I would say, all right, mate, how you doing? Like, that's what I would say. So I said that to the camera, literally. And it worked, because people like John, like, come up to me at football games now, and they just think you're your best mate. And they put your arm around you and you're like,
Spencer, how many people say to you, don't go changing? And does that get annoying?
Nah, it doesn't get annoying, to be fair, but that's one of many things they say. They say, don't forget the hashtag it, they say a lot from the football
team.
Yeah,
that's a big one.
But yeah, it's not a problem.
So what are your work hours like now? How busy are you?
Well, when the football club started to kick off and went into non-league, it was a big decision just under 6 years ago. I had to kind of really make a decision as to what route I wanted to go down, because I knew I wanted to do that properly. Like, that was really the closest thing I'd ever had to a career aspiration, was to run a football club one day, but that wasn't as a job. I thought I was going to be hopefully successful in something else, and then I'd buy a club when I was 60. That's what I thought I was going to do. But when I found myself in a position where I ran a club already, I was like, well, I don't want to fuck this up. I want to do this properly. And I couldn't do both, because I was, like I say, my YouTube hours were crazy. So my actual YouTube channel, the one that's got that million subscriber plaque, and it's been sitting on just under 2 million now for about 6 years, because I kind of had to put it to one side. I moved hashtag onto its own channel because I wanted to be bigger than me, and put a lot of time into running that, a lot of behind the scenes stuff. You know, we've grown massively as a club. Still do a lot of other stuff. Like I present a lot of FIFA esports, but I do it in the off season. You know, I had a moment a couple of years ago. I was fortunate enough to present El Clasico on British TV. So it's the, you know, obviously Barcelona at Real Madrid. It was when there's a channel called 11 Sports, and they just got the rights to La Liga and Serie A. And I was the first presenter of the first game they ever had. And it was that massive game. So I was like, this is for someone who kind of had maybe aspirations at the time to be like the next Gary Lineker or something. I was like, this is the gig. Like, don't mess this up, sort of thing. And there was a contract on the table that was, if I basically passed my live audition, I was going to present all the Serie A and La Liga football for 18 months. And I did a pretty good job, did all right. And I had a decision to make, essentially, because it basically meant I would have missed every hashtag game for the next 18 months, which is the reason I run a football club, to go to the games. So I had a decision to make. And in that week, 11 Sports folded. They lost the rights to all the football. They lost the rights to the UFC due to some conflict with Virgin Media. And then they lost all their funding because everything was about the UFC and the thing. So they stopped having the rights. I think it went to Premier TV or something. Obviously, different people. We didn't deal with them. That offer wasn't there for me. And at the time, I was like, I didn't know what decision I was going to make. But I look back now, and I think that's probably the best thing that happened, because I might have chosen to do it because it's such a good opportunity, and I would have regretted it because it would have probably killed the club, to be honest, because my whole club runs off my enthusiasm, really. So, that was a sort of line in the sand moment. What route do you want to go down? Do you want to be a football exec, or do you want to be a personality on TV or YouTube or whatever? And I kind of pursued the football one.
See, this is where I think we can relate a little bit, Spencer, because I've got a few questions. My brother is a director at Exeter City. All like my family, friends are like, so the chairman, president, all of that, are like very well involved at Exeter City. Like, and seeing your journey is quite interesting, because I remember you always saying when you were doing your YouTube videos, like, oh, I want to have my own club. My dream is to have my own club. And to see it like sort of form is quite amazing. But like, how do you deal with like a lot of the stresses that come with being a football club owner?
Very topical, because we had a game just last night and it all kicked off massively. So we've traditionally been a very successful club. Like, we've had four promotions in 5 years. Like, you know, we win a lot. And now we've reached a level where it's a lot harder. And we had 10 games without loss in the back end of 2023, 9 wins, 1 draw. And then in January, we had our worst run ever. 7 games without a win, 6 losses. Last night, we played the best team in the league on form. We were the worst team in the league on form, and we won. So we've won our first game of the year. We're very great. But more importantly, it kicked off massively. We played a team called Chatham Town in Kent, and it was lively. 2,000 people there. All went off at the end. Their fans were throwing stuff at our goalkeeper all game.
What?
Massive brawl at the end. Like, there's going to be significant repercussions, hopefully for Chatham and not for us. But I'm not saying that's because we're a YouTube team and that. I think Chatham have had some issues with other teams as well. But we do get, like, it's a weird one. We have had this season, 7 different teams in our league have had their biggest attendance when we've played them at their place. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Don't get it at our place. Like, because we play in one place every 2 weeks. And people are sort of, okay, no one really feels like they come from hashtag, obviously. So they don't want to like come out. But because we have fans everywhere, we have as many fans in Brighton as we do in Newcastle, as we do in Ireland. So if we go to Hastings or Dulwich Hamlet or any of these places for the first time, people come out, not necessarily to support us. They might be supporting their local team, but the numbers are bigger than they are normally for that team. And it's like, it's kind of like a lose-lose. We don't get any of the money for it. It all goes to the home team. They're not supporting us necessarily, but they're there to watch the circus as it's in town. And yeah, it means the refs usually getting a little bit influenced by the fans and all this stuff. So that's been the biggest struggle this year because the games have just got up a level. Like, we've had thousands and thousands of people at games multiple times. And that's pretty stressful to sort of make sure we adapt to that requirement.
So where is the home ground?
We ground share a team called Bowers and Pitsy in Basildon, Essex. So I come from very close to there. And we're still nomadic. Our women ground share another team called Avely. Our women are actually a lot better than our men statistically. Like, they're second in the third tier, so they've got a chance to get up to the championship full time professional league next season.
That is insane.
It's a lot. During COVID, obviously the seasons got sort of cancelled temporarily, so we had nothing really to do, and we were really productive in that time. We merged with a women's team, which is the best team in the county. And we merged with a youth team. So we went into COVID with one team, one men's team. And we came out with like 700 players, you know, 50-odd teams from 3 years old all the way up to adult boys and girls.
What?
Disability teams, walking teams, everything you can think of. Inclusivity teams. You know, we have a 30-acre facility where our youth teams play, where everyone's in yellow and blue. Like, I used to play against that team. It was called Forest Glade before we merged with them when I was a kid. Oh, yeah. Now when I go to their ground, it's everyone in my team's kit that I made on YouTube. Like, it's so surreal.
Crazy.
And that stuff, I'm as happy about that stuff as I am about like Wembley Cups and all the other stuff, because it's real. It's actually local in a community that I grew up in. But we are, yeah, that's the main challenge for us is that bit, because people don't think we're from anywhere, you know?
Mm. Do you sleep? Genuinely, when do you go to bed? Because I'm just thinking, how do you fit it all in?
We've got a lot of very good people at the club. It's definitely not me doing it all. Like, you know, we've inherited a lot of amazing volunteers. We've got a really good staff team. And the main thing I struggle with is going to all the games, to be honest with you, because we have our reserves play Friday night. And we take our reserves very seriously because a couple of our staff members play in that. Because what we do is we recruit a lot from our football team. So as we've got better, sometimes players might necessarily not be at the level we need them, but they're really good lads and they have something about them. So we recruit. Like, everyone in my staff team, bar... Our sort of much more experienced guy who used to work with me at Copenhagen, he's worked in Sky football for years. Everyone else, I basically trained on the job. And some of them had never edited a video before, nothing, but they just liked our football team. And that was enough for me. And now they're brilliant. But so we really care about reserves because our boys play in that. That's Friday nights. Saturday, first team play. Sunday is when women's football happens. Monday is our midweek game. So almost at least 2-3 times a month, we have Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday games. And it's like, I've also got a family. My missus is like, are you going to be around anytime soon? So it's challenging. That's why I like non-league though, David, because you can actually get home for dinner. Mm. I was playing Man United away, as much as that would be amazing, I'm going in a hotel, I'm going to be away for the weekend, you know?
Yeah. So what league are you in at the moment?
So the men are in the Isthmian Premier League. So it's the league below National League South.
And did you say Hastings are in that league?
Yeah, we played Hastings on Saturday.
Because Henning Vane supports Hastings.
Does he?
Yeah, he goes down to watch them.
Yeah, he might have been down on Saturday. They had a big crowd there.
Yeah, probably.
Biggest crowd of the season. Dulwich Hamlet, big team in that league.
Lewis,
yeah, played them a few weeks ago. Best team in it at the moment are Hornchurch. They're spending like crazy money. Mm. They're probably going to win the league. Billericay Town are in our league. They're kind of our local rivals. They obviously had a big run a few years ago and they had all the old ex-Premier League boys playing for them. And obviously, if you go another level up, you're talking like proper clubs. I mean, Yeovil are in the league above us now. One of our ex-players plays for them.
Yeah, that's insane.
But the women...
What level did you start at, Spencer? I don't know. Where does it start?
We started with me playing, which is like, you know, in the bin level. And then we went to non-league, the 10th tier of English football, step six. And so we're now at the step three, so the 7th tier. So three promotions on the men's side, and we got the women up last year as well. But the women play like, I mean, we play Portsmouth the other week, Ipswich Town, Norwich City, MK Dons, Plymouth Argyle. You know, we beat Norwich City 8-0 last year. We beat Southend United 17-0. Like, we're rubbing shoulders with proper teams and beating them, which is mad to me.
How far can you go?
It's all about context. As a West Ham fan, I am very aware that we are, you know, in an unbelievable period right now. Yes, we might not play the sexiest football and we don't have a lot of possession and whatnot, but we won a European trophy last year. We've been in Europe 3 years in a row. We've won, got out of our groups every time. We had a little bit of a small period of relegation threatened football last year, but generally safe. You know, that's amazing for us. You have to just apply context, your life as a fan, to everything. And I think where that's difficult with hashtag is we haven't been around that long. So we haven't quite leveled out yet and got to the point where this is what we are. So when I joined, I grew up around non-league. So my dad was a physio, loads of non-league teams. Some of my earlier football content was me filming the team my dad used to be a physio for. So I had a really good, I've recruited like all our management and players basically from that team at first. So I had a really good understanding of non-league, and I always aim to get to where we are. I had what I called a 5-year plan to get 3 promotions in 5 years, and we did it in 4. And it was based on logic. It was based on how much do we get from sponsors? Everything's paid for by YouTube money and sponsor money, right? So what can we sustainably spend every year and not threaten the future of the club? And what are the costs of going higher than that? So once you get into National League South, you're looking at like multiple hotel room trips and all these sorts of things. A lot of the teams are full-time professional. You've got to compete with them. Easy way to just waste money, basically. Because if you're looking at the upwards mobility and the dream, if you're selling the dream, it never ends until you get to the Prem. So you can always go, what if we get another promotion? So you have to, we sold the story to the fans a little bit, like we're 10 promotions away from the Premier League or whatever. But realistically, it was always about getting to the Isthmian Prem, just outside of National League. And then when we got the women's team, it was the same, get to tier three, just outside of professional football and sustain, which is what we're doing now, really. So answer to the question, David, like, I don't think we're just changing our aims. It's not now about chasing promotions. Now it's about getting a football ground and it's about building up our home attendances, because that is a huge part of football, really. We don't do the obvious bit of football clubs yet. Like, when you're a ground sharer, you don't get food or bar money. It goes to your landlord. So, you know, if we get our own ground one day, we've added a whole new football model, a revenue model to our football club. So then we start to be really interesting, because we've already got this separate football model that no one else has, which is through content, make money through content. But if we add the football bit, we're suddenly twice as good. So right now we have we could go up, but it would be like a money ball system where we'd done it for cheap, because there's no financial fair play in non-league or anything. Like, you just need, there's so many rich people ultimately that have clubs, way more money than we have. You know, every penny we spend has to make sense based on what we made. We don't lose money. So it'd be stupid to just compete with a club who are some rich person's plaything and are happy just to blow that money and then leave the club in 5 years and watch it happen. You see clubs like this constantly.
Yeah, look at Stymarket this season.
Exactly.
Lost all their players. They had all the money last year.
You know, yeah, we were competing with them. They were one of our promotion rivals, and then they just fell off a cliff, and now they're basically relegated already, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. You're basically playing a youth squad now.
Sadly. Happens a lot, unfortunately. Yeah. That's one of my biggest sort of pet peeves about non-league, is like, I'm not saying we should be like heralded as the best thing ever at all, but we definitely deserve a seat at the table in the conversation, because we're actually doing it in a sensible way. Like, you know, we spend what we make. All these other clubs that are just spending money. You've got to remember, it's so easy to forget, because England is this amazing football country. It's the 7th division we're in. Like, it's the 7th. In every other country, 7th division, I could probably play in, genuinely. And I'm not, and that's not me saying I'm good. That's me saying most countries' 7th division is park football. But in England, there's players in our league getting paid like over $1,000 a week in 7th division. Not at our club, but other clubs. Yeah,
that's mental.
is the tip of the iceberg. So we've got to keep, just like Exeter, I think it's important. You just, I don't ever want to compete, try and compete with other teams based on what they're doing. Because they're not us. They're not doing what we're doing. So it's just, I'm trying to make us improve every year, be it on the pitch, off the pitch, slightly bigger budget, you know, doing something new at the club, whatever.
What about pressure from the fans? Because Exeter are doing the best they've ever done, John, in League One.
Yeah. Well, not finish-wise, but yeah.
But fans are kind of turning this season, expecting more, aren't they?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. I think it's just, we're in a weird like transitional period where like not as many of the older generation of City fans are going anymore. So we're this new group of young people my age that have only ever seen like the successes of Exeter City, which is like 4 trips to Wembley in 5 years, like player finals, promotions, all of this really successful, having good players for the division, always challenging at the top end of the table, near enough in League Two. So they're now going through that sort of 16-game, like we didn't win a game for 16 games, drew one, scored like 3 goals or something. So people are starting to like, sort of similar to Hashtag, realise that, oh, maybe it isn't all sunshine and rainbows all the time. And that's quite a hard thing to manage because the season ticket holders that are coming in now are my age or people, you know, older and younger, but majority of people are starting to buy season tickets because people my age have more time. And they're starting to go like, oh, we don't want to go. So we've noticed a significant drop in like people that aren't coming season ticket-wise, especially on this run. But yeah, it's not been good, but it's just like expectations versus reality, isn't it? You've got to be a lot of, I would say a lot of football fans aren't overly rational, which is, I think, a fair comment.
We have the same problem, even exacerbated, which is we've got such a young fan base because it's YouTube, right? So they like only know us as a winning team. They never had, this little spell we've had in January is by far our worst spell. And it's really actually not bad considering only lasted for 7 games. But like, even then you're getting like things like calling for the manager to leave. Like this manager has got us every promotion. He dropped 4 divisions to join us. He was in the National League South and he dropped to the 6th tier. He's like, as much as the club's a family club for my family, the club's a family club for him as well. Like his son made his debut for the first team this year. No nepotism involved. He was killing it in the reserve, scoring loads of goals, like fully deserved. I loved that moment. Again, it's right up there, one of my favourite moments. It's been able to know that I created a club that was able to give our manager the moment where he subbed his son on. And like calling for him to go out. He's like, I mean, Alfie's followed the story. Like, you know what this job this man's done. Like,
mate, I've watched every hashtag video since the first ever game.
Have you really? Wow, yeah. That's amazing.
Every single one. And
wow.
I mean, I love Devs. I think he's messaged when I've had some struggles over the last few years and he's like reached out to me. I think he's such a great bloke and anyone calling for his head is just, they need to give their head a wobble.
Well, I mean, the most ridiculous thing is like one of the reasons we're in this bad spell is we're missing like 5 first team players. It's not even like there isn't an explanation for it. Half our team's out injured. So it just makes sense. But it's like John said, you need to have that context as a fan to know. And not often, they just don't, it's only comments, you know what I mean? The YouTube comments are a small amount of the fans.
Yeah.
Like, how many videos do we all watch? And then how often do you comment? And then if you do comment, I bet everyone in this group is probably going to comment something fairly reasonable.
Positive.
Yeah. There is like, there's people that go mad. You're like, who are you? You're not really a fan.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, the reality of Exeter City is that 20 years ago, we were like a few days from going out of existence. So when you put that into perspective, like the fact you've got a team to support every week that's in League One, which is a really, really good standard, like I think people just forget like the whole history, and then it's easy to put yourself in the 16 game and beat him run and that's it. But I go to the football ground every week and I genuinely do, and people don't believe me. I go, I'm just happy that my team's able to play, it's not in financial ruin like Reading or Bury, for example, those kind of teams. I say it all the time, but I'm just thankful every week that I get to go and I can watch my team.
Well, I'm not.
Yeah, see, David is part of that, like, really, and it's a joke, but, like, you are part of that era where you saw a promotion in your first season, which I waited 20-odd years to see, and you saw a stay up in League One comfortably the season after with, like, quite exciting free-flowing football where our manager got poached by a Championship side. So, like, you've had it pretty good as a City fan, and this is probably the worst it's been for you.
Yeah, I hate it.
You can always have more, John. The club. Yeah. You can always have more. David also does. He does walk out of games when losing as well.
Walking out early is a disgrace. It's actually, I was embarrassed to know you that day. I genuinely was.
I've never done it since. I was learning. I'm learning on the job.
Yeah, but 3 years in, you should know better. You really should. 3 years in, you should know better.
There's a moment a week. You know,
what was the score?
Right, we honestly...
Answer what the score was.
It is ridiculous.
Well, when I walked out, well, we were... Context, we were top of the league, flying high. Beating Luton in the Carabao...
Yeah, we just beat a Prem side in the Carabao Cup.
We're just beating Luton in the Carabao Cup. The very next...
It's embarrassing. You can't even tell the story.
They were 1-0 down. Ah! And then they went 2-0 up. I'm off. Goodbye.
2-0. After beating a Prem team the week before, you left at 2-0.
That's amazing. What minute was it?
What? Yeah, it was late on, wasn't it? I think they scored in like the 90s.
Yeah, it's not 5th minute. Oh, yeah, I'm done.
But that week, we had the best pod we'd ever done, as in like top of the moon. Like, literally... It's never been that good. We watched the Carabao Cup fourth round draw live on stream. It was brilliant. We were dancing around our room.
It was just a moment where I just thought, life is shit. At the end of the day. You think you're doing all right, and someone's going to bite your fucking ass. And I just thought, life's shit, I'm going home. I haven't done it since. And that was 4 months ago.
4 months clean.
I mean, it reminds me of that 11-12 season for City when... People left the ground, didn't they? The QPR game.
Yeah, that
people
is
left the ground,
that is
and
insane.
They missed that moment.
What was that?
Remember the 11-12 season when City won the league?
Yeah.
First time ever. People left because QPR were like, 3-1 up or whatever. They left.
And can you imagine being one of those people that left saying I was at that game?
I don't know if you'd ever be over it. Some people were let in who were outside and didn't have tickets because the stewards were clever enough to know, easily, had a stinker, let's let you in to watch it. It's
people like that ruin this fucking game.
Genuinely, I was embarrassed to know you when you told me that. We were literally the best it's ever been. Top of League One, lost for the first time in a while to a good side, scrappy loss, and you walked out, grabbed your son and went, we're leaving.
Sons.
Multiple.
Yeah.
Try and beat the traffic.
Yeah.
But David Park's about 5 miles away from the ground, so there is no traffic.
Yeah, that's funny little moment. I had a little wobble, I'll be honest with you.
It's all part of the process.
I swore at the opposition fans. I did this, Spencer, when we scored a goal. That's a shame.
I thought you were a nice guy.
No, it's really embarrassing. And I take all the criticism I get. It's just awful.
I mean, I used to go to West Ham. I used to have a West Ham season ticket before hashtag sort of killed that for me. But like the chicken run at Bowling Ground, like some of the things I saw, I don't know if you know, that's like the sort
run.
Of, that's like an area of the Bowling Ground where it was like just the typical West Ham fan was, you know, like the really like Green Street, like, you know, not someone you want to be on the wrong side of. And like they would just they'd become like reptiles. Like when someone walked past, it was never, they're just not just like doing all this stuff. They're just so angry. You're like, what happened to you?
Yeah.
Just absolutely. I mean, it's all part of it, but I just, that part of football fan, I like watching the Football Factory and all that stuff, but that part of football never applied to me, and I think that appealed to me, and I think that's why we're like so family friendly and stuff. Hashtag. And I think it's also why I really like women's football, because women's football is like another step further in terms of friendly atmosphere, like the way people talk to the ref. I know I sound like a bit of like a pussy now, but the reality is, I think when you have kids and stuff, you start to look at their stuff a bit more, and you think, I want my kids to enjoy their football. And we've had loads of emails today from Chatham fans actually, who've said like, they had to take their kids out of the game and stuff yesterday, you know, because then it was safe. And so they're telling us because they saw that we wrote about it on Twitter. But it's like, that's no place. I mean, my worst experience, I think, as a football fan was the Euros final, Wembley, a couple of years ago, England-Italy. Not because we lost. Obviously, that was gutting. And I was super gutted. I mean, I'm like proper, I went to Russia for a month for the Russia World Cup. You know, I've been to multiple World Cups. I love it. But that day, even before the game, when it was all kicking off at Wembley and you couldn't like, people were smashing up Wembley. It's like, this is in our capital. Yes. We're English fans. Yeah. We're in the final. We haven't been knocked out yet. And you're smashing your own town up. I know it was all like drunk fun and stuff, but it's like, and I'm not, you know, I did all that. I like getting, you know, lively with my mates and that. I'm not going to start smashing stuff up.
No,
and
ridiculous.
Then you get in the ground and I saw something you'll never unsee. And it was, obviously, this was the game. Do you remember like those people like rushed the gates and coming about tickets and stuff? And like, part of me understands that because it was super hard to get tickets and, you know, I had to pay silly money for mine. And like, It was because it was a weird
this
one.
This is a
wasn't
lot
it?
Off the back of COVID as well, isn't it?
Yeah, COVID stuff. The people knew there were spare seats in the ground because of, like, you know, social distancing, all that sort of thing. And also there was, like, it was an England final in England, but it wasn't like we were the home team, so to speak. So it's, you know, there's a lot of people who wanted to get in there. So I get it. If you could sneak in, you don't hurt anyone, and you can stand on the steps and watch the game. Like, I'm with you, mate. Like, get involved. But I saw a couple rows in front of me something that I'll never unsee, which is a lot of people were in other people's seats, obviously, right? And this guy walks in, he's probably like mid-30s with his little boy. The kid must have been like 5, right? And I just know what was going through his head. He's probably paid silly money to get this moment to say, we were there when England won the Euros for him and his son. You know, unbelievable thing to be able to do as a dad. And I see him go up to two guys and go, sorry, you're in our seats. There's loads of spare seats around. Like, do you mind just moving? And this guy, of another England fan, spits in the guy's face and punches him.
What?
The little boy is crying his eyes out. And oh, I see that dad have to just walk out the ground and go home. Because the boy was like, I want to go home, I want to go home, I want to go home. That guy didn't even get to watch the final. Imagine if we'd won that game and he'd lost that whole experience because someone... And I stopped for, like, honestly, genuinely, for like a month after that, I didn't even want to be known as a football fan. I know that sounds really over the top, but I was like, that's our country. This is before the game kicked off. We have a chance to... That guy just had to move a seat. He was in that proper, like, angry, like, you know, he probably snuck in and doesn't want anyone to get him in trouble mode. And I was like, wow. And then obviously the game happened. We lose the game, you know, and then I go on my phone and I see all this racism stuff at Saka and the penalty takers. And I'm like, oh my God, like, get me out of this country.
Sometimes I do think we don't deserve to win big tournaments. Yeah. I do think that sometimes it's grim.
I can't imagine if that tournament was happening in Sweden. Sweden are in the final. There's a load of blonde-haired guys just smashing up Stockholm. It's just never going to happen. It made worse because we had to walk like 40 minutes in the pouring rain to get out of there because they couldn't get out because there's so many people. So it's like you go from this sunny day when a few hours' time you could be European champions the first time ever. 2 hours later, I hate my country. Everyone's racist, which obviously not everyone is, but... People are punching people and it's pissing it down with rain and I'm just going to go and queue up for a McDonald's and I just want to stop living. That is how I felt in 2 hours.
Spencer, didn't you have some problems watching West Ham away in Europe once as well?
Yeah, that was like very YouTube related. Yeah, that definitely affected me as a West Ham fan for sure. It was the only problem I've ever had. It's not like it's a common thing, but it's definitely happened. Basically, I was one of the first people to be fortunate enough to have their club sort of take them under the wing as a YouTuber. Hadn't really happened much before, to be honest. And I was asked to host the... It's an amazing opportunity. First season at London Stadium, I hosted the kit launch live event outside the stadium. And a lot of people didn't know this at the time, but I actually got asked the day before because Mark Wright from Towie had pulled out. Right? Fine. I'm gonna jump at the opportunity, especially as someone who's doing a bit of presenting, West Ham. Wasn't paid or anything. It's just a favour. But I'm thinking that's an amazing opportunity. It ended up being a bit of not a great event. They had this like... They got a lot of things wrong in terms of the entertainment they booked and all this stuff. It's like, and at the same day, they had let go a guy called Terry Carr, who was the famous West Ham Academy coach that brought through like Joe Carl and like Michael Carrick and, you know, Frank Lampard, Rio Ferdinand, whoever. He's a legend at the club. But and I'm not obviously involved in that, but like that would have been 20 years ago. You know, he'd probably, maybe there was a right decision to move him on. Someone made the leap that West Ham had sacked him so they could hire a YouTuber to present the kit launch, which obviously I wasn't getting paid, and that's not how football budgets work, right? Because the event was rubbish and I was the face of it, even though I hadn't planned the event, I hadn't written the script, I literally just turned up and read what I was told to read. Everyone on live Facebook going, oh, this Spencer Owen guy, like, what has our club become? You know, YouTubers doing this, doing that. And I'm like, I'm literally a season ticket holder that films himself for games and now the club. You should be championing me because any one of you can do this. And obviously a mutual friend of ours, Alfie, since Jack, has gone on to do other stuff with the club since. You know, they've done it with other people, which is great. But like a week after that, or 2 days after that, I was going to... Oh, I followed us on our Europa League qualifiers and we went to this one was in Slovenia. And I put a tweet out basically saying I really wanted to nip this in the bud. And it's got misinterpreted, unfortunately. I put a tweet out saying, look, I don't believe any real West Ham fans have got a problem with me. But if you are, if you have, I know that you'll be in Slovenia. Because if you're a proper fan, you'd have made the trip sort of thing. I'd say that a bit, but that's what I was implying. And if you have a problem, come and meet me. I literally meant, come and meet me and we can talk it through. But West Ham fans, like West Ham fans thought I was offering them out. And like, I'll take you all on sort of thing.
Come and
like,
meet
I'm
me.
I'm definitely not saying that. And at the game, my missus, again, not a massive football fan, but she liked the idea of travelling for games. It's sunny, it's in the summer. So I bring her out here. We're in the crowd. It's like probably the second football match they've ever been to in her life. Does she take it up the arse? All this stuff. Like West Ham fans.
No way.
To me in Slovenia, where we were outnumbered and all this stuff. And then we went to Romania for the next round. And basically, we got put in a cage. Like the actual Romanian team put up, they caged physically. Imagine like Hell in a Cell in WWE. We were actually caged and locked in. So the stand that had West Ham in was a 3D all round roof on it, cage. And I saw the guy just go and lock the door. So we were all in a cage for the thing. Obviously, you put people in a cage, they're going to act like animals.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So all the West Ham fans and obviously a lot of the European faithful West Ham are a bit feisty.
Sorry, are you in there with your wife?
I'm in there, yeah. So she was on this trip with me as well. And all West Ham
lovely
fans.
Lovely little night out.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, this is in like, what's it called? Astra Juju. It's like an hour and a half cab drive from Bucharest. It's like middle of nowhere in Romania, yeah. You're like on edge. And I've got all this sort of thing murmuring in the background that I think some West Ham fans are starting to turn against me for literally no reason. And it's half time. They let us out the cage. And we're all sitting. I'm getting a burger or whatnot. And I told this story on Jack's podcast and we talked about it. Basically, he's 6'3", maybe more, tattooed skinhead, comes up to me and he goes, I think you're a C word, right? And I've got Alex.
First thing he said was that.
He didn't say C word.
No,
he said the word.
Very polite gentleman.
He literally walked up to me and said that. Cool. No, I'll tell a lie. He walked up to me and went, can I have a picture? But I'd heard him talking about me already. I've got like, you know, you get a bit of a sixth sense of this stuff, especially if you're nervous in a situation. You think, oh, something's going to happen here. And I heard him say stuff about me. So I knew he wasn't on my side. And he comes out and goes, give me a picture, mate. And I've just done some pictures of some guys because there were some fans from like a West Ham Romanian fan club that watched my videos. I was like, cool. I always would do that. And this guy was, give me a picture, mate. And I said, I'm happy to do a picture, mate. I said, I don't know if you really want one. Like, do you want one? He was like, well, you think you're too big, Tom? I said, no, I'll do a picture, mate. I said, I don't know if you're winding me up.
God.
He goes, no, you're right. I think you're a cunt, mate. And I was like, okay. And it was one of those moments where you've got to make a decision because we're literally in Romania. I've just got my missus with me. No, I'm not here with any mates, anyone that I think. And as far as I know, all West Ham fans hate me at this point in time. I don't know why, but they did. So I was like, I either sink or swim here, basically. I'm not like an aggressive guy, but I just thought, like, if I melt here, it might actually get worse. All I was thinking is, something going to happen to Alex? So I basically just went, like, I just kicked off with him verbally. I said, what are you talking about? You don't know who I am. I said, have you watched one of my videos? And he was like, no, I don't need to watch your videos. I've told it what Stan paid you and all this stuff. I was like, well, you're talking shit, mate. None of this happened. I said, I basically was like, I'm here as a West Ham fan, just like you. There's only a few of us. We're in Romania. We've been put in a cage. You're starting beef with me. Like, what have I done? I think you're a cunt. Basically what I said to him.
Cool.
And I was like, I maybe went too far there.
With the language, to be fair. Yeah. Made it clear.
It all kicked off, like not physically, but everyone started coming in and like he just sort of, we got separated sort of thing. And I can't remember the order of events. I can't remember if, I do remember. The time that posted that, when I told the story on the podcast with you guys, he had reached out to me about a year later. This guy and said,
right.
And said, since I was that guy, I said, I never told the story publicly. He said, I was that guy. I knew we get some issue in the rain. Just say, I've actually watched your videos now. I think they're really good. I'm really sorry for it. And like, I got a bit of stick when I told the story on the podcast because I basically replied to him and I said, well, like, shame on you, really. I was supposed to reply and go, like, you know, oh, thanks, mate. Let's be mates. And I was just like, no, you don't get to do that.
Yeah, of course.
You're a dick, basically. I said, I hope you learn something from that because just judge something on.
Anyway, yeah, you could. Yeah.
That was it. Yeah, it was really bad.
Did you get any response off the back of that?
I don't think so, to be honest. I don't think I did. But I got a response when I told the story in the podcast and some people said I should have like accepted his apology a bit more. But I was like,
Until
you've lived the situation, you don't know. Like,
yeah, that's
I had another issue at West Ham once where some kid come up to me and he goes, I mean, do you want me to tell? I talk a lot of stories, but it's like, do you want me to tell the story? You don't have to tell
yeah.
it.
Yeah, just yeah. what amazes me is I leave against Northampton and it's caused all this.
I hope you've learned something.
Yeah.
Don't leave games early.
Well, it definitely made me less of a West Ham fan, not because it's not like it's the club's fault, but it just makes you think, like, do I even want to go to games anymore because I think it's going to happen again? But I was a West Ham fan once and we always try and do nice West Ham game once. So I always try and do nice little bits if we can. And there was a lad who watched our hashtag videos and he bought a kit. He bought a hashtag kit and he shared, and this is something we learned quite early on, is there's a lot of horrible people in the world. So he shared a video of us getting a hashtag kit for his birthday. And he was like the happiest kid in the world. And the lad, he had autism and he, you know, was sort of behaving in a certain way that made that apparent. And we retweeted it. We retweeted it because we thought this is amazing. How nice this lad's birthday has been made by having this football kit of a made up YouTube team that I created. And obviously Twitter being Twitter, people just came for him. People just absolutely came. This is in the height of the football Twitter days and all this. And they were saying stuff like, honestly, one lad said on a tweet, if I saw that kid in the street, I'd put him in a noose or something or like stab him. I was just like, what is going on in the world? So we reached out to the kid's mum, whose Twitter account was the thing. And we invited him down to a game and we gave him the sort of him come in the changing rooms and all that. And like, you know, we didn't put it on YouTube or social media because we're not trying to do it for street cred. We did it because we felt sorry for the little boy. And I told this story on a podcast. I think it was the True Geordie podcast. Next week, I'm at West Ham game. Some 14-year-old lad comes up to me and he goes, why are you telling lies on the True Geordie podcast? And I was like, what? I think this lad might have even been the lad that did the tweet, or he might have been part of the football Twitter group. And he was like, that kid didn't have autism. You made that up. And you didn't invite him to a game. I was like, well, I did. Like, I literally met him. You know, just because it's not on YouTube doesn't mean it didn't happen, mate. I think we're in the right for not putting on YouTube. We're not trying to exploit the young lad, but we did happen, mate. And I'm being nice to him at this point. He's like, you're full of shit. And I just lost the plot. I just went, no, you're full of shit. I was like, you're literally, because he was telling me stuff he does on Twitter. And I was like, you're a little, said everything you want to say to one of these Twitter kids, yeah, which I probably shouldn't have. I was like, you're a little gremlin. I was like, if you were 4 years older, I'd literally be like coming for you right now, but you're too young, so I'm going to leave you. And then guess what happens? I got on my phone and he's running off on Twitter on the video going, Spencer Owen's just trying to fight me. He's a bully. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm never talking to anyone in the rest of my life.
What?
This kid is a wronger. All I did was say you're a piece of shit, because he said I was a piece of shit. That's all I did. Anyway, therapy over.
That's crazy.
I know.
I've been to a few West Ham games and we've got a bit of crap.
What was Jack?
Yeah, it's just so weird. It really is just so weird. I've never got at Ipswich. Not once at Ipswich. Everyone was lovely.
I know. Things still be all right, won't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're not
I
with John.
Think about the little street I walk home.
Yeah, if you're with me, you might get some stick. But other than that.
It's a different scene now. Everyone gets it now. Like when Bazinga, our mate Bazinga, did the Lucas Paqueta interview. Like, amazing. This is so good. Like, I'm not trying to say I'm a hero by any means, but I think I took some of the slack so other people didn't have to. Certainly in the West Ham community. And then other people just figured it, and now everyone wants to be a bloody YouTuber now, don't they? So they'll get it. But that then it was like freak show sort of thing.
Yeah. Spencer, before you go, can I ask a question? You've met lots of talented footballers, famous footballers. I don't quite know what my question is, but it's to do with smell and hair.
Did you smell their hair, maybe?
I knew this was coming.
Do they smell nice? Do they look nice up close?
Right, just across the board.
I don't know what the question is.
Take your time.
What's the question?
You must have met some footballers.
No, the only one I met was that old Arsenal fullback. He came back with Romish at a gig.
Lee Dixon?
Spanish.
Oh,
like
Bellerin.
3 or 4 years. Yeah.
He's one of the Bellerin. Best.
He's good
great.
Looking.
He smells lovely.
Oh, I couldn't take my eyes off him.
He's one of my favourites, to be fair. I actually would have probably mentioned him if you hadn't. Like, I had this thing about Spanish players. Every Spanish player I've ever done anything with has been super nice,
super
really
smelly.
Engaged. Like, you know, some of these footballers just don't, especially if it's like a
yeah
appearance thing, just don't care. They've always been amazing. Like Bellerin, yeah. Juan Mata, Cesar Azpilicueta owns some of Hashtag. Like, he literally is one of our co-owners. So the Spanish guys are, I'm not saying that all Spanish people are amazing, but in my experience, they've been great. And they smell lovely. They smell of like sort of fresh orange juice.
Does anyone smell like shit?
I don't think anyone smelled like shit. Some people's attitudes are shit.
As if he's just going to say, I am Milner.
No, I think footballers generally smell nice. They love it, aren't they? Because they're all so like into their, like, you know, their little man bags with the aftershave in.
Yeah.
But have you got giddy around any players, or are you just used to it now?
You know, I've never been that guy, honestly. I've never been that person that's been like impressed by. I think footballers are amazing, right? But I know they're just sort of human beings, and I know that with every extreme talent, be it football or even like a genius mind or anything, there's usually something on the other side that's deficit. That's the nature of the beast. We do the other thing in this country, right? We go like, Wayne Rooney is this prodigious 16-year-old. He must also be the perfect gentleman, and he must never do anything wrong. The reality is, he's just done football for all of his life. He probably is a not well-rounded individual. That's how the world works. Tiger Woods, you know, these scandals and things happen. We shouldn't look down on them. We should go, this is a natural eventuality from not having a childhood, etc. So I've always got that, to be honest. I've had experiences the opposite where I've been like, wow, you're really underwhelming and I can't believe, like, you don't do more with this opportunity you've got, sort of thing. But I think like the only people that give me that, I think if I met like Bob Dylan, I'm a massive Bob Dylan fan. I think if I met him, I'd probably melt. And that's it, really. I just think, obviously, those people like Robin Williams is my favourite guy ever. Like, when I was growing up, I'd love to. Obviously, he's no longer with us, but I would love to have met him. I think I would have.
Did you ever hear the Marc Maron episode on What the Fuck podcast?
No,
it's one of his first ever episodes. I think it helped sort of blow up his podcast. He went to Robin Williams' house and did a pod from his living room.
Wow.
And it's great. The first 15 minutes, just like, fucking hell, that's out of his house, shit. Yeah, it's really worth listening.
So talented, like these guys, man. Those people really impressed. I think that's the thing, right? I didn't like football until I was like 14. I didn't play football. I didn't like football. I got into football through computer games. I got into football through Football Manager. And so I didn't grow up with that, like, I think I'm going to be a footballer, I want to be a footballer, any of that. I actually worship like stand-ups and actors and people that had that sort of that kind of talent. I still kind of am that. People think I'm so, like, I obviously love football and I've built a life around it, but it's just a small part of my personality, to be honest. And I think you end up getting put in a lane, don't you? And I'm not complaining because it's been great to me, but yeah, like that Euros thing was when I started to think, like, right, it's time to do something else for a bit, because I was like, football's, I don't identify with football fans sometimes, but it's what's not so good about the sport. That's why I love World Cups, is that it is this world sport. So when you went to Russia, yeah, England had a great run and that was amazing. But the best bit about it actually was when you go to the bars and you make friends with a Colombian and a guy from Africa and someone from Russia and someone from, and you realize we're all the same. And actually football is this thing that brings everyone together. So that's what I really love about it.
Yeah. Well, Spencer, thank you for coming up. John, have you got one other question? In case you never...
I've got so many questions. I don't think I could pick one. Honestly, this is probably, other than the Barrow game where I was commentating for the BBC when we got promoted, this is probably the second biggest moment of my career. Like, genuinely. I'm not even joking.
That's lovely.
I'll take it. I hope for your sake it gets better. I hope the career takes off from here.
For the Barrow game. You're out there with the Barrow game, son.
No, that was that night. Like, that night was special, and you know it was. You were there. It was a special night.
It was a special night.
No, but genuinely, like, you have played a massive part in my childhood. So, thank you. I guess that's the only thing I can say.
Well, it was my pleasure. What people usually say to me now at games, they come up to me and they say that, they go, "You were my childhood, and now I watch your brother's golf videos." My brother does golf, and they all just get to a certain age, and you go to golf. So we're trying to cover off the whole sort of, my younger brother's going to start, you know, retirement complex reviews very soon. And then we should have the whole thing covered from birth to death.
Yeah. Thank you, Spencer. Thanks for coming on. It's been brilliant.
Well, my pleasure, guys. Thank you very much for having me. I've actually been to St. James Park next to before, not for a game. You might know this guy, John. Hashtag legend, Faisal Majdog Manji.
Oh, don't get me started on Faisal Majdog Manji.
He went to uni in Exeter. He literally, you can see the ground from his garden where he lived.
No way, Manchdog went to Exeter.
Yeah, when I visited him, I was always been obsessed with football stadiums. I could literally see on the pitch from his house where he lived.
It's probably changed loads since then, but yeah, that's crazy. Manchdog, you wait till I tell the lads.
Couple hashtag boys did. Charlie Armstrong, that's a bit of a niche name, but he played in the original hashtag team. He went to Exeter as well.
I all those names, like the throwback, like Dan Brown, Ryan Adams, like Tom the Drab. What's his name?
Tom the Tarantula Jepson.
Jepson, yeah. Oh my God, like there's so many. Honestly, like.
David,
yeah.
What's so weird about this when I hear people like John like waxing lyrical about these get lads who are literally my mates from school who didn't get in the football team at school? Like, and now people are going, Tom the Tarantula Jepson, what a player. And you're like, I mean, he is. He's better than me.
He's a right.
You're just
fine.
Like, so funny. Yeah. They're like legends.
Yeah. Is Tom Deacon still doing stand up?
He does still do stand-up, yeah. He does stand-up. He's got he does a lot of stuff in... he presents a lot of esports as well, so we've crossed paths a few times in that. He does, like, the F1 esports. He loves his motorsport. He loves his NFL. He presents... He's got a radio show. He used to obviously be in Radio 1. I think he's got a show on BBC Southampton. But, yeah, he's still a stand-up.
I remember when Tom... Because he won that award, didn't he? I remember when he came onto the circuit. He was like, one of the sexy comedians.
The long hair, didn't he?
Yeah, I thought we were all like, fucking hell. Okay.
Yeah, he had a bit of... I think he had a bit of... material about Tresemme or something, if I remember correctly.
But, oh, did
yeah.
he?
Yeah, he loved yeah. it. Yeah. And then the other one I want to see, because, you know, seeing Joe Thomas from the In-Betweeners, he's doing some stand-up at the moment. Yeah, he went to my school.
Oh, is he?
Went to my school. I want to go and check him out. I've never seen him do stand-up. Obviously, know about his stuff on In-Betweeners and whatnot. And the lad who wrote Fresh Meat was in my class at school.
Who?
Keith Akushi. He was co-writer of Fresh Meat. He also wrote that... Festival, I think it's called, film with, I think.
Oh, yeah. One of the in-betweeners, in it.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. We had a thing at our school, David, called FDL. It's called Fleur de Lis. And I think it's pretty unique. It was a debating society. It was a comedy club. And you basically had to get, and it was run by the students. You had to get voted on by doing a stand-up thing. Then you do the Friday assemblies for the whole school. You do like a, you write a sketch. So it's like, and we controlled it completely. No teachers were allowed in the room. We filmed them all, and it actually was the downfall of this 100-year-old debating society, because we started putting them on YouTube and the whole thing got canned because we'd done some dodgy material, basically. We used to just take the mick out of each other, really. But that was my first exposure to stand-up, and that's why I kept doing it, because I loved it at school. And I think that is, if you could put that in every school, it would be unbelievable. Such a good breeding ground.
You wouldn't do it again, would you, stand-up?
I would love to do it in terms of, like, I enjoyed it, but I think it's just, I've got too much to lose now, basically, to not be good at it. But that is like, that Keith Akushi, Joe Thomas, they all came through that FDL, as well as myself. Like, so it has actually had some, and loads of other people, I think, in the older generation, like more traditional kind of in the earlier years, have come through FDL. So it's like a thing. And I'd love for more schools to have that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I could do it. I just don't think I could. Maybe I could do a show about football or something, or about hashtag, and try and make it funny. But I don't know, man. I think that ship sailed. It's like the podcast tour Alfie and Jack and that did. That would have been like that, wouldn't it? Everyone wants you to succeed. Your guys.
Yeah. No, I was just saying, it is amazing. You're like the Beatles for 2 weeks, and then
so cool.
Back to the shit of life.
Back to being actual Beatles.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that would be the way to do it for me. Some sort of thing with some mates or something like that, where you know you've got your crowd on side. Because I didn't ever love. I don't know if you're the same, but I used to. I think everyone does. Like, I get like the walk to the stage. I would literally be going, just get the fuck out of it. Just run out. No one will care. Just run.
Yeah.
And then as soon as I was on stage, I loved it. I never had any issue on stage.
Yeah.
But I hated the like. Bear in mind, I never really did it as a job, really. But I hated the. You can't have a front. It's ironic because I don't have any social life now because of football. But at the time, I was like, in my early 20s, I was gigging on a Friday night, gigging on a Saturday night, getting a train up to like somewhere. It's anti-social hours. And I hated the idea of losing my life to it because I wasn't basically good enough. If I was good enough, I think I'd have loved it. And I'd been like, oh, mate, just do this every day. But I wasn't really there.
I said before, like, it's only happened like 3 or 4 times on stage, but I'd be performing as in character. So I'd be going, hello, everyone. And I'd suddenly detach from myself and go, what are you doing? Oh, what's there, a joke? Here we go, mate.
Have you ever done like a show where you're like, you and your character are interacting with each other, almost like you're saying that? That could be quite funny. Like, yeah. Like a sort of second person.
Yeah, Nini Conti used to have a little puppet.
Yeah.
I've seen her live. Like yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
She's,
good. Thank you, Spencer. Thank you, mate.
Pleasure.
Thanks for coming on.
Thank you very much.
If you're ever in the area, get yourself down to a hashtag game. John, get us an Exeter pre-season friend of your connections, mate. We'll come down.
I genuinely could do that. Like 100%.
We could do that. We'd probably have to play some of the kids or else we'd struggle, I think. But what's the women's team saying?
Yeah, we've got a pretty strong women's team. I think they're in the I always get it wrong. It's like the top of the Southwest one. So
yes,
that'll be the
division below us.
Yeah.
What we could do, I tried to do it at Salford City, but we couldn't do it because their stadium is, we could do a men's and women's friendly. First game, aggregate score. If your men pump us 4-0, our women will bring it back.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah.
I don't know how you want to get in contact with me, but we can 100% sort that, definitely. Sort some loans as well, get some loans down to you boys.
Oh, now you're talking about that language. You know, we had a lad from Chelsea this year, goalkeeper.
Yeah, I saw that.
Absolute joke. Yeah. And he was on the bench for Chelsea in the Carabao Cup semi final last week. He's only 17. That's crazy. We get some more of them, we'll take them.
I'll put you in contact with Marcus, our technical director. He sorts out all that stuff. They'll definitely sort something. Because it's not too far. I mean, it's not, you know, very close. Exit is far from everywhere, but it's still close enough to be a viable loan location, definitely.
Yeah. We're used to travelling now. We've got to that point. We have to do it a lot. So in terms of friendlies as well, we can come to you guys. But that's the thing. If we go to Exeter, I guarantee you we'll get a good turnout.
I would be surprised if it's not a sellout, genuinely, or close to. People would love it. No, we'll sort a pre-season friendly for the next season up. Defo, we'll do that.
Perfect. I love it.
Cheers, Spencer.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
Cheers, mate.
All the best.
Bye.